Chapter 9. Poor gentleman, what he did out of his grave, was struck from heaven with a plague, and died in a most deplorable manner, and, in a word, they were every one of them carried into the great pit which I have mentioned above, before it was quite filled up, which was not above a fortnight or thereabout. These men were guilty of many extravagances, such as one would think human nature should have trembled at the thoughts of at such a time of general terror as was then upon us, and particularly scoffing and mocking at everything which they happened to see that was religious among the people, especially at their thronging zealously to the place of public worship, to implore mercy from heaven in such a time of distress. And this tavern where they held their dub being within view of the church door, they had the more particular occasion for their atheistical profane mirth. But this began to abate a little with them before the accident which I have related happened, for the infection increased so violently at this part of the town now, that people began to be afraid to come to the church. At least such numbers did not resort thither as was usual. Many of the clergymen likewise were dead, and others gone into the country, for it really required a steady courage, and a strong faith for a man not only to venture, being in town at such a time as this, but likewise to venture to come to church, and perform the office of a minister to a congregation, of whom he had reason to believe many of them were actually infected with the plague, and to do this every day, or twice a day, as in some places was done. It is true the people showed an extraordinary zeal in these religious exercises, and as the church doors were always open, people would go in single at all times, whether the minister was officiating or no, and locking themselves in two separate pews, would be praying to God with great fervency and devotion. Others assembled at meeting houses, every one as their different opinions in such things guided, but all were promiscuously the subject of these men's drollery, especially at the beginning of the visitation. It seems they had been checked for their open insulting religion in this manner by several good people of every persuasion, and that, and the violent raging of the infection, I suppose, was the occasion, that they had abated much of their rudeness for some time before, and were only roused by the spirit of ribaldry and atheism at the clamor which was made, when the gentleman was first brought in there, and perhaps were agitated by the same devil, when I took upon me to reprove them, though I did it at first with all the calmness, temper, and good manners that I could, which for a while they insulted me the more for thinking it had been in fear of their resentment, though afterwards they found the contrary. I went home, indeed, grieved, and afflicted in my mind at the abominable wickedness of those men, not doubting, however, that they would be made dreadful examples of God's justice, for I looked upon this dismal time to be a particular season of divine vengeance, and that God would on this occasion single out the proper objects of his displeasure in a more special and remarkable manner than at another time, and that though I did believe that many good people would, and did, fall in the common calamity, and that it was no certain rule to apostrophe judge of the eternal state of any one by their being distinguished in such a time of general destruction either one way or other, yet, I say, it could not but seem reasonable to believe that God would not think fit to spare by his mercy such open declared enemies, that should insult his name and being, defy his vengeance, and mock at his worship and worshippers at such a time. No, not though his mercy had thought fit to bear with and spare them at other times, that this was a day of visitation, a day of God's anger, and those words came into my thought, Jer. 9. Shall I not visit for these things? Saith the Lord. And shall not my soul be avenged of such a nation as this? These things, I say, lay upon my mind, and I went home very much grieved, and oppressed with the horror of these men's wickedness, and to think that anything could be so vile, so hardened, and notoriously wicked, as to insult God, and his servants, and his worship in such a manner, and at such a time as this was, when he had, as it were, his sword drawn in his hand on purpose to take vengeance not on them only, but on the whole nation. I had, indeed, been in some passion at first with them, though it was really raised, not by any affront they had offered me personally, but by the horror their blaspheming tongues filled me with. However, I was doubtful in my thoughts, whether the resentment I retained was not all upon my own private account, for they had given me a great deal of ill language to I mean personally. But after some pause, and having a weight of grief upon my mind, I retired myself, as soon as I came home, for I slept not that night, and giving God most humble thanks for my preservation in the imminent danger I had been in, I set my mind seriously, and with the utmost earnestness, to pray for those desperate wretches, that God would pardon them, open their eyes, and effectually humble them. By this I not only did my duty, namely, to pray for those who despitefully used me, but I fully tried my own heart, to my fun satisfaction, that it was not filled with any spirit of resentment as they had offended me in particular. And I humbly recommend the method to all those that would know, or be certain, how to distinguish between their zeal for the honor of God, and the effects of their private passions and resentment. But I must go back here to the particular incidents which occur to my thoughts of the time of the visitation, and particularly to the time of their shutting up houses, in the first part of their sickness. For before the sickness was come to its height, people had more room to make their observations than they had afterward. But when it was in the extremity, there was no such thing as communication with one another as before. During the shutting up of houses, as I have said, some violence was offered to the watchmen. As to soldiers, there were none to be found. The few guards which the king then had, which were nothing like the number entertained since, were dispersed, either at Oxford with the court, or in quarters in the remoter parts of the country, small detachments excepted, who did duty at the Tower and at Whitehall, and these but very few. Neither am I positive that there was any other guard at the Tower than the warders, as they called them, who stand at the gate with gowns and caps, the same as the yeomen of the guard, except the ordinary gunners, who were 24, and the officers appointed to look after the magazine, who were called armorers. As to trained bands, there was no possibility of raising any, neither, if the lieutenancy, either of London or Middlesex, had ordered the drums to beat for the militia, would any of the companies, I believe, have drawn together, whatever risk they had run. This made the watchmen be the less regarded, and perhaps occasioned the greater violence to be used against them. I mention it on this score to observe that the setting watchmen thus to keep the people in was, first of all, not effectual, but that the people broke out, whether by force or by stratagem, even almost as often as they pleased, and, second, that those that did thus break out were generally people infected who, in their desperation, running about from one place to another, valued not whom they injured, and which perhaps, as I have said, might give birth to a report that it was natural to the infected people to desire to infect others, which report was really false. And I know it so well, and in so many several cases, that I could give several relations of good, pious, and religious people who, when they have had the distemper, have been so far from being forward to infect others, that they have forbid their own family to come near them, in hopes of their being preserved, and have even died without seeing their nearest relations lest they should be instrumental to give them the distemper, and infect or endanger them. If, then, there were cases wherein the infected people were careless of the injury they did to others, this was certainly one of them, if not the chief, namely, when people who had the distemper had broken out from houses which were so shut up, and having been driven to extremities for provision or for entertainment, had endeavored to conceal their condition, and have been thereby instrumental involuntarily to infect others who have been ignorant and unwary. This is one of the reasons why I believed then, and do believe still, that the shutting up houses thus by force, and restraining, or rather imprisoning, people in their own houses, as I said above, was of little or no service in the whole. Nay, I am of opinion it was rather hurtful, having forced those desperate people to wander abroad with the plague upon them, who would otherwise have died quietly in their beds. I remember one citizen who, having thus broken out of his house in Aldersgate Street or thereabout, went along the road to Islington. He attempted to have gone in at the Angel Inn, and after that the White Horse, two inns known still by the same signs, but was refused, after which he came to the Pied Bull, an inn also still continuing the same sign. He asked them for lodging for one night only, pretending to be going into Lincolnshire, and assuring them of his being very sound, and free from the infection, which also at that time had not reached much that way. They told him they had no lodging, that they could spare but one bed up in the garret, and that they could spare that bed for one night, some drovers being expected the next day with cattle, so, if he would accept of that lodging, he might have it, which he did. So a servant was sent up with a candle with him to show him the room. He was very well dressed, and looked like a person not used to lie in a garret. And when he came to the room he fetched a deep sigh, and said to the servant, I have seldom lain in such a lodging as this. However, the servant assuring him again, that they had no better, well, apostrophe says he, I must make shift, this is a dreadful time, but it is but for one night. Apostrophe so he sat down upon the bedside, and bade the maid, I think it was, fetch him up a pint of warm ale. Accordingly the servant went for the ale, but some hurry in the house, which perhaps employed her other ways, put it out of her head, and she went up no more to him. The next morning, seeing no appearance of the gentleman, somebody in the house asked the servant, that had showed him upstairs, what was become of him. She started. Alas, L, says she, I never thought more of him. He bade me carry him some warm ale, but I forgot. Apostrophe upon which, not the maid, but some other person was sent up to see after him, who, coming into the room, found him stark dead and almost cold, stretched out across the bed. His clothes were pulled off, his jaw fallen, his eyes open in a most frightful posture, the rug of the bed, being grasped hard in one of his hands, so that it was plain he died soon after the maid left him. And 'tis probable, had she gone up with the ale, she had found him dead in a few minutes, after he sat down upon the bed. The alarm was great in the house, as anyone may suppose, they having been free from the distemper till that disaster, which, bringing the infection to the house, spread it immediately to other houses round about it. I do not remember how many died in the house itself, but I think the maid servant who went up first with him fell presently ill by the fright, and several others. For, whereas there died but two in Islington of the plague the week before, there died 17 the week after, whereof 14 were of the plague. This was in the week from the 11th of July to the 18th. There was one shift that some families had, and that not a few, when their houses happened to be infected, and that was this. The families who, in the first breaking out of the distemper, fled away into the country, and had retreats among their friends, generally found some or other of their neighbors or relations, to commit the charge of those houses to for the safety of the goods and the like. Some houses were, indeed, entirely locked up, the doors padlocked, the windows and doors having deal boards nailed over them, and only the inspection of them committed to the ordinary watchmen and parish officers. But these were but few. It was thought that there were not less than 10,000 houses forsaken of the inhabitants in the city and suburbs, including what was in the out parishes and in Surrey, or the side of the water they called Southwark. This was besides the numbers of lodgers, and of particular persons who were fled out of other families, so that in all it was computed that about 200,000 people were fled and gone. But of this, I shall speak again. But I mention it here on this account, namely, that it was a rule with those who had thus two houses in their keeping or care, that if anybody was taken sick in a family, before the master of the family, let the examiners or any other officer know of it, he immediately would send all the rest of his family, whether children or servants, as it fell out to be, to such other house which he had so in charge, and then giving notice of the sick person to the examiner, have a nurse or nurses appointed, and have another person, to be shut up in the house with them which many for money would do, so to take charge of the house in case the person should die. This was, in many cases, the saving a whole family, who, if they had been shut up with the sick person, would inevitably have perished. But, on the other hand, this was another of the inconveniences of shutting up houses, for the apprehensions and terror of being shut up made many run away with the rest of the family, who, though it was not publicly known, and they were not quite sick, had yet the distemper upon them, and who, by having an uninterrupted liberty to go about, but being obliged still to conceal their circumstances, or perhaps not knowing it themselves, gave the distemper to others, and spread the infection in a dreadful manner, as I shall explain further hereafter. And here I may be able to make an observation or two of my own, which may be of use hereafter to those into whose bands these may come, if they should ever see the like dreadful visitation. 1. The infection generally came into the houses of the citizens by the means of their servants, whom they were obliged to send up and down the streets for necessaries, that is to say, for food or physic, to bake houses, brew houses, shops, and and to going necessarily through the streets into shops, markets, and the like. It was impossible, but that they should, one way or other, meet with distempered people, who conveyed the fatal breath into them, and they brought it home to the families to which they belonged. 2. It was a great mistake, that such a great city as this had but one pest house, for had there been, instead of one pest house viz., beyond Bunhill Fields, where, at most, they could receive, perhaps, 200 or 300 people I say, had there, instead of that one, been several pest houses, every one able to contain 1,000 people, without lying 2 in a bed, or 2 beds in a room, and had every master of a family, as soon as any servant especially had been taken sick in his house, been obliged to send them to the next pest house, if they were willing, as many were, and had the examiners done the like among the poor people, when any had been stricken with the infection. I say, had this been done, where the people were willing not otherwise, and the houses not been shut, I am persuaded, and was all the while of that opinion, that not so many, by several thousands, had died. For it was observed, and I could give several instances within the compass of my own knowledge, where a servant had been taken sick, and the family had either time to send him out, or retire from the house and leave the sick person, as I have said above, they had all been preserved. Whereas when, upon one or more sickening in a family, the house has been shut up, the whole family have perished, and the bearers been obliged to go in, to fetch out the dead bodies, not being able to bring them to the door, and at last none left to do it. 3. This put it out of question to me, that the calamity was spread by infection, that is to say, by some certain steams or fumes, which the physicians call effluvia, by the breath, or by the sweat, or by the stench of the sores of the sick persons, or some other way, perhaps, beyond even the reach of the physicians themselves, which effluvia affected the sound who came within certain distances of the sick, immediately penetrating the vital parts of the said sound persons, putting their blood into an immediate ferment, and agitating their spirits to that degree which it was found they were agitated. And so those newly infected persons communicated it in the same manner to others. And this I shall give some instances of, that cannot, but convince those who seriously consider it, and I cannot, but with some wonder, find some people. Now the contagion is over. Talk of its being an immediate stroke from heaven, without the agency of means, having commission to strike this and that particular person, and another which I look upon with contempt as the effect of manifest ignorance and enthusiasm. Likewise the opinion of others, who talk of infection being carried on by the air only, by carrying with it vast numbers of insects and invisible creatures, who enter into the body with the breath, or even at the pores with the air, and their generator emit most acute poisons, or poisonous aviaries, which mingle themselves with the blood, and so infect the body. A discourse full of learned simplicity, and manifested to be so by universal experience. But I shall say more to this case in its order. I must here take further notice, that nothing was more fatal to the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.